41. At 3 that afternoon, a strange meeting took place in the royal court of Delane at the base of the Needle, a great room which, over the years, had become known simply as Pena's Court. Meeting. I don't like that word. It's too tame and small to describe the momentous decision that was arrived at that afternoon. I cannot call it a hearing or a trial because that gathering had no legal meaning at all, but it was very important, as I think you will agree. The room was large enough to hold 500, but there were only 7 there that afternoon. 6 of them huddled close together as if it made them nervous to be so few in a place meant for so many. The royal arms of the kingdom, a unicorn spearing a dragon, hung on one of the circular stone walls, and Peter found his gaze returning to this again and again. Besides himself, Pena was there, and Flag. It was Flag, of course, who sat slightly apart from the others, and 4 of the kingdom's great lawyers. There were 10 great lawyers in all, but the other 6 were at various far-flung places in Delane hearing cases. Pena had decided he couldn't wait for them. He knew he had to move fast and decisively or the kingdom might bleed. He knew it, but it galled him to know he would need the help of this cool young murderer to avert such bloodshed. That Peter was a murderer was something Anders Pena had now decided in his own heart. It wasn't the box, the green sand, or even the burning mouth that had decided him. It was Peter's tears. Peter, to do him credit, looked neither guilty nor weak now. He was pale but calm, completely in charge of himself again. Pena cleared his throat. The sound echoed dully back from the forbidding stone walls of the court chamber. He pressed a hand to his forehead and was not entirely surprised to find a sheen of cold sweat there. He had heard testimony in hundreds of great and solemn cases. He had sent more men than he cared to remember beneath the headsman's axe, but never had he thought he would have to attend a meeting such as this, or the trial of a prince for the murder of his royal father. And such a trial would surely follow if all went as he hoped this afternoon. It was right, he thought, that he be sweating, and right that the sweat should be cold. Just a meeting. Nothing legal here, nothing official, nothing of the kingdom, but none of them. Not Pena, not Flag, not the great lawyers, not Peter himself. We're fooled. This was the real trial, this meeting. The power was here. That burning mouse had set a great course of events in motion. That course would either be turned here, as a great river may be turned near its source when it is still a brook, or it would be allowed to run onward, gathering power as it went, until no force on earth could turn it or stand before it. Just a meeting, Anders Pena thought, and wiped more sweat from his forehead. 42. Flag watched the proceedings with a lively eye. Like Pena, he knew that all would be decided here, and he felt confident. Peter's head was up, his gaze firm. He met the eyes of each member of this informal jury in turn. The stone walls frowned down on all 7. The spectators' benches were empty, but Pena seemed to feel the weight of phantom eyes, eyes that demanded justice be rendered in this terrible matter. "My lord," Pena said at last, "the sun made you king 3 hours ago." Peter looked at Pena, surprised but silent. "Yes," Pena said, as if Peter had spoken. The great lawyers were nodding, and they looked dreadfully solemn. "There has been no coronation, but a coronation is only a public event. It is, for all its solemnity, show and not substance. God, the law, and the sun make a king, not the coronation. You are king at this very minute, legally able to command me, all of us here, the entire kingdom. This puts us in a terrible dilemma. Do you understand what it is?"
"Yes," Peter said gravely. "You think your king is a murderer."
Pena was a little surprised by this bluntness, but not entirely unhappy with it. Peter had always been a blunt boy. It was a pity that his surface bluntness had concealed such depths of calculation. But the important thing was that such bluntness, probably the result of a boy's stupid bravado, would speed things up. "What we believe, my lord, doesn't matter. Guilt or innocence is for a court to determine. So I've always been taught, so I believe with my most sincere heart. There is only one exception to this. Kings are above the law. Do you understand?"
"Yes," But, Pena raised his finger, but this crime was committed before you were king. So far as I know, this terrible situation has never come before a court of Delane before. The possibilities are terrible. Anarchy, chaos, civil war. To avert all of these things, my lord, we must have your help.
Peter looked at him gravely. I will help if I can, he said. And I think, I pray, you will agree to what I am about to propose, Pena thought. He was conscious of fresh sweat on his forehead, but he didn't wipe it off this time. Peter was only a boy, but he was a bright boy. He might take it as a sign of weakness. You'll say you're agreeing for the good of the kingdom. But a boy who could have the monstrous, twisted courage to kill his own father is also, I hope, a boy who cannot help believing he will get away with it. You believe we will help you cover this up, but oh, my lord, you are so wrong. Flag, who could almost read these thoughts, raised his hand to his mouth to cover a smile. Pena hated him, but Pena had become his number one helper without even knowing it.
I want you to put aside the crown, Pena said.
Peter looked at him with grave surprise. Renounce the throne? He asked. I don't know, my Lord Judge General. I should have to think about that before I said yes or no. That might be hurting the kingdom by trying to help it, as a doctor may kill a sick man by giving him too much medicine. The lads clever, Flag and Pena, thought together.
You misunderstand me. It's not a renunciation of the throne I ask for, only that you put the crown aside until this matter has been decided. If you are found innocent of your father's murder, as I will be, Peter said. If my father had ruled until I was old and toothless, it would have made me perfectly happy. I wanted only to serve him and support him and love him in all I did.
Yet your father is dead, and you stand accused by circumstance. Peter nodded.
If you are found innocent, you would resume the crown. If you are found guilty...
The great lawyers looked nervous at this, but Pena did not flinch.
If you are found guilty, you would be taken to the top of the needle where you would spend the rest of your life. None of the royal family may be executed. That law is 1,000 years old.
And Thomas would become king? Peter asked thoughtfully. Flag stiffened slightly.
Yes.
Peter frowned, deep in thought. He looked terribly tired, but not confused or afraid, and Flag felt a faint stirring of fear.
Suppose I refuse. If you refuse, then you become king in spite of terrible charges which have not been answered. Many of your subjects, most in light of the evidence, will believe they have come to be ruled by a young man who murdered his own father to gain the throne. I think there will be revolt and civil war, and that those things will come before much time has passed. As for myself, I would resign my post and set out toward the west. I am old to begin over, but I should have to try to do so just the same. My life has been the law, and I could not serve a king who has not knelt to the law in such a matter as this.
There was silence in the chamber, a silence that seemed very long. Peter sat with his head bowed, the heels of his hands planted against his eyes. They all watched and waited. Now even Flag felt a thin film of sweat on his brow. Finally, Peter raised his head and took his hand from his eyes. Very well, he said. Here is my command as king. I will put the crown aside until I am cleared of my father's murder. You, Pena, will serve Delane as chancellor during the time it is without a royal head. I would that the trial should take place as soon as may be, tomorrow even, if that is possible. I will be bound by the decision of the court, but you will not try me. They all blinked and sat up straighter at this dry note of authority. But Joseph of the stables would not have been surprised by it. He had heard that tone in the boy's voice before when Peter was only a stripling.
One of these other four will do that, Peter continued. I'll not be tried by the man who will hold power in my place, a man who, by his look and manner, already feels in his heart that I have committed this terrible crime.
Pena felt himself flush.
One of these four, Peter reiterated, turning to the great lawyers, let 4 stones, 3 black and 1 white, be put in a cup. The one who draws the white stone shall preside at my trial. Do you agree?
My lord, I do. Pena agreed slowly, hating the flush which even now wouldn't leave his cheeks. Again, Flag had to raise a hand to his mouth to cover a small smile. And that, my little doomed lord, is the only command you will ever give as King of Delane, he thought.
43. The meeting, which began at 3 o'clock, was over by 4:15. Senates and parliaments may drone on for days and months before deciding a single issue, and often the issue is never decided at all in spite of all the talk. But when great things happen, they usually happen fast. And 3 hours later, as dark was coming down, something happened which made Peter realize that, mad as it seemed, he was going to be found guilty of this terrible crime. He was escorted back to his apartments by unsmiling, silent guards. His meals, Pena said, would be brought to him. Supper was fetched by a burly home guardsman with a heavy stubble of beard on his face. He was holding a tray. On it were a glass of milk and a large steaming bowl of stew. Peter stood up as the guardsman came in. He reached for the tray. "Not yet, my lord," the guardsman said, the sneer in his voice apparent. "It needs seasoning, I think." And with that he spat into the stew. Then, grinning, showing a mouthful of teeth and gaps like an ill-tended picket fence, he held the tray out. "Here." Peter made no motion to take it. He was utterly astonished. "Why did you do that? Why did you spit in my stew? Does a child who murders his father deserve any better, my lord?" "No. But one who has not even been tried for the crime does," Peter said. "Take that out and bring me a fresh tray. Bring it in 15 minutes, or you'll sleep tonight below Flag in the dungeons." The guardsman's ugly sneer faltered for a moment and then returned. "I think not," he said. He tilted the tray, first just a little, then more, then more. The glass and bowl shattered on the flagstones. Thick stew splattered in ropes. "Lick it up," the guardsman said. "Lick it up like the dog you are." He turned to go. Peter, suddenly blazing, leaped forward and slapped the man. The sound of the blow rang in the room like a pistol shot. With a bellow, the scruffy guardsman pulled out his short sword. Smiling humorlessly, Peter lifted his chin and bared his neck. "Go ahead," he said. "A man who would spit in another man's soup is perhaps also the sort of man who would cut an unarmed man's throat. Go ahead. Pigs also do God's bidding, I believe, and my shame and my grief are very great. If God wills me to live, I must, but if God wills me to die and has sent such a pig as you to do the killing, that is very well." The home guardsman's anger melted into confusion. After a moment, he sheathed his sword. "I'll not dirty my blade," he said, but his words were almost a mumble, and he was not able to meet Peter's eye. "Bring me fresh food and drink," Peter said quietly. "I don't know who you have been talking to, guardsman, and I don't care. I don't know why you are so eager to condemn me for my father's murder when no testimony has yet been heard, and I don't care about that either. But you will bring me fresh meat and drink, and a napkin to go with them, and you will do this before the clock strikes 6:30, or I will ring for Pena, and you will sleep below Flag tonight. My guilt is not proved. Pena is yet mine to command, and I swear what I say is true." During this, the home guardsman grew paler and paler because he saw Peter did speak the truth. But this was not the only reason for his pallor. When his mates had told him the prince had been caught red-handed, he had believed them. He had wanted to believe them, but now he wondered. Peter did not look or speak like a guilty man.
"Yes, my lord," he said.
The soldier went out. A few moments later, the captain of the guard opened the door and looked in.
"I thought I heard some disturbance," he said.
His eye fell on the broken glass and crockery.
"Has there been trouble here?"
"No trouble," Peter said calmly. "I dropped the tray. The guardsman has gone to fetch me a fresh meal." The captain nodded and left. Peter sat on his bed for the next 10 minutes and thought deeply. There was a brief knock on the door. "Come," Peter said. The bearded, gap-toothed guard came in with a fresh tray.
"My lord, I wish to apologize,"
he said with awkward stiffness. I've never behaved so in my whole life, and I don't know what came over me. For my life I do not. Peter waved it away. He felt very tired. Do the others feel as you do, the other guards? My lord, the guardsman said, carefully setting the tray on Peter's desk. I'm not sure I still feel the way I did. But do the others feel that I am guilty? There was a long pause, and then the soldier nodded. And is there some one reason they tell against me most of all? They speak of a mouse that burned. They say you wept when Pena confronted you. Peter nodded grimly. Yes. Weeping had been a bad mistake, but he hadn't been able to help it, and it was done. But most of all, they only say you were caught, that you wanted to be king, that it must be so. That I wanted to be king, and so it must be so, Peter echoed. Yes, my lord. The guardsman stood looking at Peter miserably. Thank you. Go now, please. My lord, I apologize. Your apology is accepted. Please go. I need to think. Looking as if he wished he had never been born, the home guardsman stepped out the door and closed it behind him. Peter spread his napkin over his knees but didn't eat. Any hunger he might have felt earlier was now gone. He plucked at the napkin and thought of his mother. He was glad, very glad indeed, that she wasn't alive to see this, to see what he had come to. All of his life he had been a lucky boy, a blessed boy, a boy to whom, it sometimes seemed, no bad luck ever came. Now it seemed that all the bad luck which should have been his over the years had only been stored up to be paid at once and with 16 years of interest. But most of all, they say you wanted to be king, and it must be so. In some deep way, he understood. They wanted a good king they could love, but they also wanted to know they had been saved by only a hair's breadth from a bad one. They wanted blackness and secrets. They wanted their fearful tale of rotten royalty, God only knew why. They say you wanted to be king, they say it must be so. Pena believes it, Peter thought, and that guardsman believed it. They will all believe it. This is not a nightmare. I have been accused of my father's murder, and not all my good behavior and my obvious love for him will dismiss the charge, and part of them wants to believe I did it. Peter carefully refolded his napkin and laid it over the top of the fresh bowl of stew. He could not eat. 44. There was a trial, and it was a great wonder, and there are histories of the event if you care to read them. But here's the root of the matter. Peter, son of Roland, was brought before the Judge General of Delane by a burning mouse, tried in a meeting of 7, which was not a court, convicted by a home guardsman who delivered his verdict by spitting into a bowl of stew. That is the story, and sometimes stories tell more than histories, and more quickly, too. 45. When Ulrich Wicks, who drew the white stone and took Pena's place on the bench, announced the verdict of the court, the spectators, many of whom had sworn for years that Peter would make the best king in Delane's long history, applauded savagely. They rose to their feet and surged forward, and if a line of home guards with their swords drawn had not held them back, they might well have overturned the sentence of lifelong imprisonment and exile at the top of the needle and lynched the young prince instead. As he was led away, spittle flew in a rain, and Peter was well covered by it, yet he walked with his head up. A door to the left of the great courtroom led into a narrow hallway. The hallway stretched perhaps 40 paces, and then the stairs began. They wound up and up, around and around, all the way to the top of the needle where the 2 rooms Peter would live in henceforth, until the day he died, awaited him. There were 300 stairs in all. We will come to Peter at the top, in his rooms, and in good time. His story, as you will see, is not done. But we will not climb with him, because it was a climb of shame, leaving his rightful place as king at the bottom and marching, shoulders back and head erect, toward his place as prisoner of the kingdom at the top. It would not be kind to follow him or any man on such a walk.
Let us instead think of Thomas for a while and see what happened when he recovered his wits and discovered that he was King of Delane. 46.
No, Thomas whispered in a voice that was utterly horrified. His eyes had grown huge in his pale face, his mouth trembled. Flagg had just told him that he was King of Delane.
But Thomas did not look like a boy who has been told he is the king. He looked like a boy who has been told he is to be shot in the morning.
No, he said again, I don't want to be king.
It was true. All his life he had been bitterly jealous of Peter, but one thing he had never been jealous of was Peter's coming ascension to the throne. That was a responsibility Thomas had never in his wildest dreams wished for, and now one nightmare was piled on top of another. It seemed it wasn't enough that he had awakened to the news that his brother had been imprisoned in the Needle for the murder of their father, the king. Now, here was Flagg with the appalling news that he was king in Peter's place. No, I don't want to be king. I won't be king. I refuse. I utterly refuse.
You can't refuse, Thomas,
Flagg said briskly. He had decided this was the best line to take with Thomas, friendly but brisk. Thomas needed Flagg more now than he had ever needed anyone in his whole life. Flagg knew this, but he also knew that he was uniquely at Thomas's mercy. He would be wild and skittish for a time, apt to do anything, and care would have to be taken to establish a firm hold over the boy here at the outset. You need me, Tommy, but it would be a very bad mistake for me to tell you that. No, you must say it to me. There must be no question about who is in charge, not now. Not ever.
Can't refuse?
Thomas whispered. He had jerked upright on his elbows at Flagg's awful news. Now he fell weakly back on his pillows again.
Can't. I feel weak again. I think the fever's coming back. Send for the doctor. I might need to be bled.
You're fine,
Flagg said, standing up.
I've filled you full of good medicine. Your fever's gone. And all you want is a little fresh air to finish the job. But if you need a doctor to tell you the same thing, Tommy.
Flagg let the smallest note of reproach creep into his voice.
Then you need only to pull the bell.
Flagg pointed at the bell and smiled a little. It was not a terribly kind smile.
I understand your urge to hide in your bed. But I wouldn't be your friend unless I told you that any refuge you sense in your bed or in trying to stay sick is a false refuge.
False?
I advise you to get up and begin working at getting your strength back. You're to be crowned with royal pomp and ceremony in 3 days' time. Being carried up the aisle in your bed to the platform where Paina will stand with the crown and scepter would be a humiliating way to start a kingly reign. But if it comes to that, I assure you they will do it. Headless kingdoms are uneasy kingdoms. Paina means to see you crowned as soon as possible.
Thomas lay on his pillows trying to absorb this information. He was rabbit-eyed with fear. Flagg grabbed his red-lined cloak from the bedpost, swirled it over his shoulders, and hooked its gold chain at his neck. Next, he took a silver-headed cane from the corner. He flourished it, crossed his waist with it, and made a large bow in Thomas's direction. The cloak, the hat, the cane. These things scared Thomas. Here had come a terrible time when he needed Flagg more than he had ever needed him before, and Flagg looked dressed for... He looks dressed for traveling. His panic of a few moments ago was only a minor scare in comparison with the frightful, cold hands which seized Thomas's heart now.
And now, dear Tommy, I wish you a healthy disposition all of your life, all the cheer your heart can stand. A long, prosperous reign, and goodbye.
He started for the door and had actually begun to think the boy was so utterly paralyzed with panic that he,
Flag would have to think of some stratagem for returning to the little fool's bedside on his own when Thomas managed a single strangled word.
Wait!
Flag turned back, an expression of polite concern on his face.
My lord king?
Where are you going?
Why?
Flag looked surprised, as if it hadn't occurred to him until now to think Thomas would even care.
And you were to start with. They are great sailors, you know, and there are many lands beyond the Sea of Tomorrow I've never seen. Sometimes a captain will take a magician on board for good luck, to conjure a wind if the ship is becalmed, or to tell the weather if no one wants a magician. Well, I am not as young as I was when I first came here, but I can still run a line and unfurl a sail.
Smiling, Flag mimed the action, never dropping his cane. Thomas was up on his elbows again.
No!
He nearly screamed.
No!
My lord king!
Don't call me that!
Flag crossed to him, now allowing an expression of deeper concern to fill his face.
Tommy, then. Dear old Tommy, whatever's wrong.
What's wrong? What's wrong? How could you be so stupid? My father's dead by poison. Peter's in the needle for the crime. I must be king. You are planning to leave and you want to know what's wrong?
Thomas uttered a wild, shrieky little laugh.
But all these things must be, Tommy.
Flag said gently.
I can't be king,
Thomas said. He seized Flag's arm and his nails sank deeply into the magician's strange flesh.
Peter was meant to be king. Peter was always the smart one. I was stupid. I am stupid. I can't be king.
God makes kings,
Flag said. God, and sometimes magicians, he thought with an inward titter.
He has made you king, and mark me, Tommy, you will be king. Either you'll be king, or there will be dirt shoveled over you.
Let it be dirt, then. I'll kill myself.
You'll do no such thing.
Better to kill myself than to be laughed at for 1,000 years as the prince who died of fright.
You'll make a king, Tommy. Never fear. But I must go. These days are cold, but the nights are colder, and I want to be clear of the city before dusk falls.
No, stay!
Thomas clutched wildly at Flag's cloak.
If I must be king, then stay and advise me as you advised my father. Don't go! I don't know why you want to go anywhere. You've been here forever.
Ah, finally, Flag thought. This is good. In fact, this is rich.
It is hard for me to go,
Flag said gravely.
Very hard. I love Delane. And I love you, Tommy.
Then stay.
You don't understand my situation. Anders Pena is a powerful man, an extremely powerful man. And he doesn't like me. I should think it fair to say he probably hates me.
Why? Partly because he knows how long, how very long I have been here. More, I think, because he senses exactly what I mean to Delane.
It's hard to say, Tommy. I suppose it has to do with the fact that he is a very powerful man. And powerful men usually resent other men who are as powerful as themselves. People like a king's closest advisor, perhaps.
As you were my father's closest advisor?
Yes.
He picked up Thomas's hand and squeezed it for a moment. Then he let go of it and sighed mournfully.
A king's advisors are much like the deer in a king's private park. Such deer are cosseted and patted and fed by hand, Both advisors and tame deer have pleasant lives, but I've all too often seen a tame park deer end up on the king's table when the king's preserves wouldn't yield up a wild buck for that night's deer steaks or venison stew. When a ruling king dies, the old advisors have a way of disappearing.
Thomas looked both angry and alarmed. Has Paina threatened you?
No, he has been very good,
Flag said.
Very patient. I have read his eyes, however, and I know that his patience will not last forever. His eyes tell me that I might find the climate in Andua healthier.
He rose with another swirl of cape.
So, as little as I like to go.
Wait!
Thomas cried again, and in his pinched, pallid face, Flag saw all his ambitions about to be fulfilled. If you were protected when my father was king because you were his advisor, wouldn't you be protected now that I am king if you were my advisor? Flag appeared to think deeply and gravely.
Yes, I suppose. If you made it very clear to Paina, very clear indeed, that any move made against me would be looked upon with royal disfavor. Very great royal disfavor.
Oh, I would, Thomas said eagerly. I would, so will you stay? Please, if you go, I really will kill myself. I don't know anything about being a king, and I really will.
Flag still stood with his head down, his face deep in shadow, apparently thinking solemnly. He was, in fact, smiling. But when he raised his head, his face was grave.
I have served the kingdom of Delane almost all of my life,
he said.
And I suppose that if you commanded me to stay, stay and serve you to the best of my abilities.
I do so command you,
Thomas cried in a quivering, febrile voice. Flag sank to one knee.
My lord,
he said. Thomas, sobbing with relief, threw himself into Flag's arms. Flag caught him and held him.
Don't cry, my little lord king,
he whispered.
All will be well. Yes, all will be very well for you and me and the kingdom.
His grin widened, showing very white, very strong teeth. 47. Thomas couldn't sleep a wink the night before he was to be crowned in the Plaza of the Needle, and in the early morning hours of that dread day he was seized by a terrible fit of vomiting and diarrhea brought on by nervousness. It was stage fright. Stage fright sounds both silly and comic, but there was nothing either silly or comic about this. Thomas was still only a little boy, and what he felt in the night, when we are all most alone, was an extremity of fear so great that it would not be wrong to call it mortal terror. He rang for a servant and bade him fetch Flag. The servant, alarmed by Thomas's pallor and the smell of vomit in the room, ran all the way and hardly waited to be given entry before bursting in and telling Flag that the young prince was very ill indeed, might even be dying. Flag, who had an idea of what the trouble was, told the servant to go and tell his master he would be with him shortly and to fear nothing. He was there in 20 minutes. I can't go through with it, Thomas moaned. He had vomited in his bed and the sheets stank of it.
I can't be king. I can't, please. You have to stop it from happening. How can I go through with it when I may vomit in front of Paina and all of them? Vomit or...
You'll be fine,
Flag said calmly. He had mixed a brew which would both soothe Thomas's stomach and temporarily cement his bowels shut.
Drink this.
Thomas drank it. I'm going to die, he said, putting the glass aside. I won't have to kill myself. My heart will just burst from fear. My father said that sometimes rabbits die that way in snares, even if they aren't badly hurt, and that's what I am, a rabbit in a trap dying of fear. You're partly right, dear Tommy, Flagg thought. You're not dying of fear as you think, but you are indeed a rabbit in a trap.
You will change your mind about that, I think,
Flagg said. He had been mixing a second potion. It was cloudy pink, a restful color. What's that?
Something to calm your nerves and let you sleep.
Thomas drank it. Flagg sat by his bedside. Soon Thomas was sleeping deeply, so deeply that if the servant had seen him at that moment, he might have believed his prediction had come true and Thomas was dead. Flagg took the boy's sleeping hand in his own and patted it with something like love. In his own way, he did love Thomas, but Sasha would have known Flagg's love for what it was, the love of a master for his pet dog. He is so much like his father, Flagg thought, and the old man never knew it. Oh, Tommy, we will have wonderful times, you and I, and before I am done, the kingdom will run with royal blood. I'll be gone, but I won't go far, at least not at first. I'll come back in disguise, just long enough to see your fly-blown head on a spike, and to open your brother's chest with my dagger, and rip his heart from his chest and eat it raw, as his father ate the heart of his precious dragon. Smiling, Flagg left the room. 48. The coronation went off with no trouble or complications at all. Thomas's servants, he had no butler, being too young, but this would be provided for soon, dressed him for the occasion in fine clothes of black velvet which were strewn with jewels. All mine, Thomas thought with wonder, and with dawning greed. These are all mine now, and high black boots of finest kid leather. When Flagg appeared promptly at 11:30 and said,
It is time, my lord king.
Thomas was far less nervous than he had expected. The sedative the magician had given him the night before was still working in him. Take my arm, then, he said, in case I stumble. Flagg took Thomas's arm. In the years to come, it was a posture the inhabitants of the court city would become very familiar with, Flagg appearing to bear the boy king up as if he were an old man instead of a healthy youngster. They walked out together into bright, wintry sunshine. A cheer so great it was like the sound of surf breaking against the long, desolate strands of the eastern barony greeted their coming. Thomas looked around, amazed at the sound, and his first thought was, Where is Peter? Surely this must be for Peter. Then he remembered that Peter was in the needle and realized the cheering was for him. He felt a dawning pleasure. And I must tell you that the pleasure was not just in knowing the cheers were for him. He knew that Peter, locked in his lonely tower rooms, must hear the cheering too. What does it matter now that you were always best in lessons? Thomas thought with a mean happiness that pricked him even as it warmed him. What does it matter now? You are locked in the needle and I am to be king. What does it matter that you brought him a glass of wine every night and... But this last thought caused a strange, greasy sweat to rise on his forehead, and he put it away from him. The cheers rose again and again as he and Flagg walked first to the Plaza of the Needle and then under the arch formed by the upraised ceremonial swords of the Home Guard, dressed again in their fine red ceremonial uniforms and their tall wolf-jaw shakos. Thomas began to positively enjoy himself. He raised a hand in salute, and his subjects' cheers became a storm. Men threw their hats in the air, women wept for joy. Cries of, the king, behold the king, Thomas the Lightbringer, long live the king, rose in the air. Thomas, who was only a boy, thought they were for him. Flagg, who had perhaps never been a boy, knew better.
The cheers were because the time of unease was past. They were cheering the fact that things could go on as they always had, that the shops could be reopened, that grim-eyed soldiers in tight leather hats would no longer stand watches around the castle in the night, that everyone could get drunk following this solemn ceremony and not worry about waking to the sounds of confused midnight revolt. No more than that. No less than that. Thomas could have been anyone, anyone at all. He was a figurehead. But Flagg would see that Thomas never knew that. Not, at any rate, until it was too late. The ceremony itself was short. Anders Pena, looking 20 years older than the week before, officiated. Thomas answered, "I will, I shall, and I swear in all the right places," as Flagg had coached him. At the end of the ceremonies, which were conducted in such solemn silence that even those at the farthest edges of the huge crowd could hear them clearly, the crown was placed on Thomas's head. Cheers rose again, louder than ever, and Thomas looked up, up and up the smooth, rounded stone side of the needle to the very top where there was but one window. He couldn't see if Peter was looking down, but he hoped Peter was. He hoped Peter was looking down and biting his lips in frustration until the blood flowed down his chin, as Thomas had often bitten his own lips, bitten them until there was a fine white network of scars there. "Do you hear that, Peter?" he shrilled in his mind. "They're cheering for me. They're cheering for me. They're finally cheering for me." 49. On his first night as king, Thomas the Lightbringer awoke straight up and staring in bed, his face stark and horrified, his hands crammed against his mouth as if to stifle a scream. He had just had a terrible nightmare, one even worse than those in which he relived the awful afternoon in the Eastern Tower. This dream had been a kind of reliving, too. He was in the secret passage again, spying on his father. It was the night his father had been so drunk and furious, striding around the room and shrilling defiance at the heads on the walls. But when his father came to the head of Niner, the things he said were not the same.
"Why do you stare at me?"
his father shrieked in the dream.
"He's killed me, and I suppose you couldn't stop that, but how could you see your brother imprisoned for it? Answer me, damn you! I did the best I could, and look at me! Look at me!"
His father began to burn. His face turned the dull red of a well-banked fire. Smoke burst from his eyes, his nose, his mouth. He doubled over in agony, and Thomas saw that his father's hair was on fire. That was when he woke up. "The wine," he thought now in horror. "Flagg brought him a glass of wine that night. Everyone knew that Peter brought him wine every night, so everyone thought Peter poisoned the wine. But Flagg brought him wine that night, too, and he never did before, and the poison came from Flagg. He said it was stolen from him years ago, but he would not allow himself to think of such things. He would not. Because if he did think of such things,
he would kill me,"
Thomas whispered, horrified. "You could go to Pena. Pena doesn't like him." Yes, he could do that. But then all his old dislike and jealousy of Peter returned. If he told, Peter would be let out of the needle and would take his place as king. Thomas would be no one again, just a bumbling prince who had been king for one day. It had taken only one day for Thomas to discover he could like being king. He could like it very much, especially with Flagg to help him. Besides, he didn't really know anything, did he? He only had an idea, and his ideas had always been wrong.
"He's killed me, and I suppose you couldn't stop that. But how could you see your brother imprisoned for it?"
"Never mind," Thomas thought. "It must be wrong. It has to be wrong. And even if it isn't, it serves him right." He turned over on his side, determined to go back to sleep, and after a long time, sleep came. In the years ahead, that nightmare sometimes came again. His father accusing his hidden, spying son and then doubling over, smoking, his hair on fire. In those years, Thomas discovered two things: guilt and secrets, like murdered bones, never rest easy, but the knowledge of all three can be lived with. 50. If you had asked him,
Flagg would have said with smiling contempt that Thomas could keep a secret from no one except a person who was mentally enfeebled, and perhaps not even from such a one as that. Certainly he could not keep a secret, Flagg would have said, from the man who had engineered his rise to the throne. But men like Flagg are full of pride and confidence in themselves, and although they may see much, they are sometimes strangely blind. Flagg never guessed that Thomas had been behind Niner that night, and that he had seen Flagg give Roland the glass of poisoned wine. That was a secret Thomas kept.